It has been a long time since he was out there, active. But he's still around. The Zodiac managed to generate enough fear in California, enough notoriety around the world, to have lived in the mind of mankind for half a century to this point. And not rent-free, as the saying goes. No, the rent was agreed to be 5 lives. Though I think we all know that that number is much too low. The letters have all been sent, and the ciphers, the codes that have been cracked to date, seemingly only serve to crack a smile on the ghost of a killer, who still haunts us to this day. But now, there's a strong possibility that we suddenly have a real shot, after all these years, to know who he was, why he was. And it's strange, because for the most part, people seem resistant to the idea. They seem upset that the game may finally be over. They don't want to believe it. They don't want to know. The Zodiac, somewhere along the line, became more beloved legend than elusive killer. And that's maybe the most disturbing thing of all.
Can we talk something else? Can we talk about something else?
Hello out there. This is a special episode of Dark Topic featuring an interview with one of the members of the Case Breakers, a group of 40 former FBI agents, journalists, and retired law enforcement dedicated to solving high-profile cold cases. Jennifer Buchholz, a surveillance expert, a licensed private investigator, an investigative journalist, and professor of criminal justice and forensic science, also an Army veteran specializing in counterintelligence, as well as podcast host of Break the Case. That's a long list of, but she's pretty incredible. She's very recently come across my radar, pun intended, there, I guess. We'll get to that later. And she's here to share some of what the Case Breakers have discovered regarding the infamous Zodiac case. Welcome to Dark Topic, and thank you so much for this exciting interview, Jennifer Buchholz.
Oh, for sure. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to talk to you about all this.
Oh, I'm very excited. We got put together by a mutual friend, Kim Phillip, and that was just a couple of days ago. So I kind of have been having to rush to get to this, as you've told me there's going to be a blackout of some of this information. It's looming. Is that correct?
Fortunately or unfortunately, however you want to look at it, Case Breakers is due to sign a contract for a documentary on our work on this case in the very near future. And once that's signed, we can no longer do any interviews about the Zodiac stuff without, you know, explicit permission from the network, which I don't think they're going to grant.
Right.
So we're trying to get as much information out there as we can before we go under that media blackout.
That's awesome. And I'm so happy to be able to be one of the podcasts that can put some of that information out for you. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to, in like 2 days, put together a Dark Topic on the Zodiac case. To be honest with you, Jennifer, when I started to dig into it, thinking that, you know, foolishly, that possibly I could whip together a Dark Topic on the Zodiac case to pair with this, I was shocked. I actually got a hold of you. I was like, I don't know. Sorry. Yeah. I'm going to need your help.
It's immense. It is immense. I can't even keep every single little thing straight, and I can't recite every date and all that stuff from Zodiac, so don't feel bad. It has spanned 50 years, you know, 50 years of research and investigation, so there's no way any one person can pare that down into something reasonable.
No. For the audience, though, if you're looking for a recap or, you know, even a recap on the Zodiac case, you're not going to find it here. What you're going to find is just some new information on it. And we'll dive into a couple of the suspected murders or the actual murders of the Zodiac to try to tie them to some of the information that you have. But my first question for you, Jennifer, I've been listening to some of your interviews and watching you on YouTube and all that, and I found myself so frustrated with some of the feedback that you guys are getting. I just want to make it very clear that you are part of the group, the Case Breakers, that is all over the news right now regarding the Zodiac. It's that group, right?
Yes, I am an investigative member, an official member, and I also sit on the board of directors. So I have 2 direct links to the group.
That's awesome. Okay, so you're one of the 40 that they talk about.
Yes, I am.
Wow. Wow. Okay, so what I want to say to you is, or ask you, what's frustrating about how you or the Casebreakers are being portrayed by the media and perceived by all these knuckleheads online? Like, can we start by just making it really clear who the Casebreakers are and what the mission is?
For sure. So Casebreakers was actually started about 10 years ago by a guy named Tom Colbert, whose main background is in journalism, reporting, investigative journalism, stuff like that. And he formed this little group. It was just him and a few other people about 10 years ago because they got some information about the D.B. Cooper case. Mm-hmm. So they started following that information and did their own years-long research project into that case and ended up writing a book about it and everything. And then we can talk about this if you want, but a tip or information, I should say, about Dale Julin's research into the Zodiac case was brought to me mm-hmm. directly from him. And he was asking for my assistance in trying to get his information in front of law enforcement, which was an overwhelming task. But through that process is how I got connected with Tom Colbert and the Casebreakers. And he really decided that we're doing good things and we have, you know, combined hundreds of years of experience between these members. Let's just make this official and try to go forth and do good things. And so that's what we're doing. Like, we're officially a nonprofit, so people can make, you know, tax-deductible donations. We're officially a nonprofit. And, there's about 40 of us, and we all have varied backgrounds, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Because it really helps to have those different points of view when you're investigating a case, obviously.
Right. The way that I see it, and it's not the way that I'm seeing you guys being portrayed or the comments in the dummy sections of YouTube or Reddit, is that you're out for, I don't know, like you're pushing the information out too quickly and all this kind of stuff because you want to get ahead of it before somebody else says. Here's what I want to say about my impression of it. The impression that I get from your group is that you're just trying to spend the time that law enforcement can't spend on cases that have gone so cold like this. They have no time to spend on, the Zodiac case anymore, right?
Yeah, correct. And nor do they care to. I mean, it's just an unfortunate reality that there's not enough manpower and resources to tackle a 50-year-old
right.
case where the suspect is most likely dead and, you know, it's generations have passed. There's just more pressing crimes that they have to investigate. So it's really not their fault. But the reason, you know, for those who think that we jumped the gun on this, the reason this is not at all how we wanted to go public, but right. the reason we did is because law enforcement would not collaborate, specifically Riverside PD. We asked them over and over again to please do a DNA comparison to the guy we think who was Zodiac, which is Gary Francis Post, and they just refused. And, you know, I think we're going to talk about the Sherry Jo Bates murder, but that's under their jurisdiction. And we had, you know, even more pushback from them on that case, us trying to bring them information. And so we felt like we were at a dead end because we're not badged law enforcement. You know, like at some point we need their help.
Right.
And we just felt like we didn't have much choice but to go public. But, I mean, also people need to remember that we've publicized maybe 10% of what we know about Gary Post right. and his connection to Zodiac. So don't think that what we've released is like everything. I think people are missing that.
I'm not. That's what blows me away about this, because the information that you guys have already put out there and what I've learned from you, I'm pretty close to being convinced this is the guy. And this is only 10% of it. Also, mm-hmm. I want to make clear for you, I know that you've said this in the past, or just give you the opportunity to say this. You guys never claimed to have solved this case. And that's what the media is saying that you've said, right?
No, we've never used that word, nor would we until law enforcement makes that determination. We're just saying this is the information we've compiled over 7-8 years of work. It points to this guy, and now we're asking law enforcement to either confirm or refute our findings. That's it. We're just looking for that answer. And no matter what the answer is, it helps us move forward.
Right.
You know, and getting some answers for these victims and their family members. That's it. No, we did not claim that we solved it. I don't know where that came from, but it wasn't us.
Well,
and we're not saying 100% it's Gary Post. We're just saying he seems like the most likely guy.
Yeah. It's unfortunate in this day and age. I mean, well, it's always been like this. The press will take it and just try to sell their advertising with big claims like that. Mm-hmm. And then the people want people. There's a lot of people like in the comment sections that I'm talking about are so-called Zodiac experts. They act like they want to get to the actual truth and they want to be critical and put a discerning eye on this kind of stuff just in case. Right. And that's fine. That's what they should do. But I think in many situations, people, especially in comment sections, they're just flexing some muscle where they want to feel superior and they want to feel right.
Yeah.
And you're wrong. I see them attacking you guys and they don't even have all the information, and it's really pissing me off. But anyways, let's give the information out there appropriately, at least on this podcast.
Sure.
Okay. So
absolutely. And, one other thing on that is that, you know, there's a lot of Zodiac experts out there, no doubt. People who've spent longer than we did, you know, researching
right.
this. Don't forget, nobody's been arrested, and this case is still open. So it's really an invalid claim, I guess, to say that we are wrong when your guy hasn't been arrested, you know, or there's been no press release by law enforcement saying your guy is him. So we're all in the same boat. And I don't know, I guess some people just make it into a competition, which is ridiculous because we're talking about people who lost their lives.
I know.
It's not a competition.
Oh, it throws a monkey wrench into the works, and you got to spend all this time putting out these little fires that they're trying to start, right? And these accusations, right? And it's a waste of time. It happens in politics. It happens in everything. We won't go – anyways, I just wanted to vent a little bit of that and show that, you know, some empathy or sympathy for your situation, and that I don't know how you do it.
I appreciate that.
Oh, my God.
That's when I just ignore all that because I know they're being ridiculous and I know the truth. So.
Right.
That's all that really matters.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Okay, so this whole potential solve of the Zodiac's identity began with a troubled man reaching out to a very important person in all this, Dale Julis, correct?
Yes, Dale Julin, yes.
Julin.
A news reporter previously out of California.
Somebody misspelled his name when I was looking it up. I had Julis. I copied this too, so thanks again to the press.
Yeah, it's Julian with an N at the end of his last name.
All right. And you're very careful to give him his respect and his due at every turn, I've noticed. He must be huge in this, right?
He is. I mean, he's the main investigator, I would say. not because he sought this case out, but like you said, because a tip was brought to him mm-hmm. about Gary Post, and he just started doing his own research and confirming, you know, all this information that had been given to him, and then we'll get into, but you know, uncovered a lot more clues and information that led him to believe that Post was the Zodiac killer.
Okay, and if you can, I mean, obviously you can't talk about what you can't talk about, but this guy, you're calling him Will. I think his actual name has been released, but if you still prefer to call him Will, or okay,
he asked for anonymity, so we gave him a pseudonym, which is Will.
Got it. Just so you know, I think you probably know this. The New York Post, I believe, already released his name.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. We don't need to.
Yeah.
Okay. So what was it that he came to Julin with?
Well, it was really just, it was one of these tips where he showed up at the news station. He was actually on the run from Gary Post because he had confronted Post about being Zodiac. Post tried to kill him. So Will was actually on the run when he finally made contact with Dale and told him this whole story. And of course, it sounds kind of outlandish at the beginning, but like I said, Dale did his due diligence and did a ton of research and confirmed everything that Will had told him about Post. Like, you know, he was in the Air Force. He was a radar man. He was stationed at Vandenberg in Greenland. You know, like he was finding newspaper articles and military records to confirm everything that Will had told him. And so, but Will had basically said, I think Gary Post, which was his father figure growing up, was the Zodiac killer, you know, and this is why. And I'm not going to go into all the details of why he thought this, but suffice to say, Dale obviously went down the path and came to the same conclusion. And we can get into the ciphers and anagrams if you want, but that is his decoding of some of those taunting letters is what convinced me.
Yeah.
That he had the right guy.
Awesome. I know I want to get to all that. I won't drag this out too far for you. But again, this is just some information I was able to pick up. It's possible that Gary Francis Post, where was he from?
We're just saying that he's from a small town in the high
Okay, keep it. Gotcha.
And he lived in the Bay Area, obviously. We know that.
Okay.
The Zodiac killings. But yeah, we're not naming the town that he last lived in because there's actually some trauma going on with some of his neighbors and other residents of that town. So we're just kind of trying to protect them.
Okay. I'll keep this on my end. You don't have to respond to this if this is uncomfortable to the whole thing. This is just information that is out there that I picked up. That it's possible that Gary Francis Post, who we're thinking might be the Zodiac killer here, had this posse in his hometown, and this young man, Will, was a part of this, where he was kind of training kids up out in the woods and, like, killing bears and harassing people, maybe even killing other people. Like, it's possible this guy was, like, training a group of men. There's even guys on Facebook who were, like, they all seem to have so much respect for Gary Francis Post, these younger men, taking photos with him, even posting that he might have been the Zodiac back in 2018. Is this anything you can talk about or care to talk about?
I don't know a ton of details, and it's not that I can't talk about that.
Sure.
I probably know as much as you know that's been publicized.
Right.
Because this wasn't really, some of this came out in Dale's research, but not a lot of it. It's been more recent.
Right.
But yeah, it sounds like Gary Post never had any kids of his own.
Right.
He did marry a woman who had a child, but he never fathered any of his own. And for whatever reason, it seems like he kind of sought out, not lost souls, you know, but like kids, I think mostly male, younger males who didn't have a father figure or didn't have a lot of, you know, parental interaction or whatnot, and was able to kind of take them under his wing and teach them some of these are just valid skills. I mean, he was a survivalist, you know, he could easily live off the land and he enjoyed doing that. But he would teach these skills to some of these younger men, you know, and take them out, hunting and show them how to use weapons and how to make like a bear cache so that you can protect your food when you're sleeping at night. And, you know, which like berries are poisonous and which are not. And, you know, this stuff like that, like Boy Scout type stuff, really.
Right.
A lot of it's just similar to what you'd learn in the Boy Scouts. And I don't know if there was anything sinister behind this. I don't know what his motive was for not wanting to have his own kids, but yet, you know, taking these other kids under his wing. That's something that I've not yet figured out.
Yeah. I find it.
Yes, you're correct. I mean, there is, and Will was one of these kids. I mean.
Okay.
So. Yeah.
I find that part super interesting. Well, I guess that'll all come out in the future in books and things like that if they interview these people and all that. But just the thought that, say he is the Zodiac killer, he's out there training these kids to shoot and kill and filling their heads maybe with some of his rhetoric, right, or his beliefs, systems, and possibly even grooming them to do some damage in the world. And maybe they did. I mean, I find that all very, very, very interesting. But again, that's to come out in the future. I want to get you on to just quickly what he did for a living as a young man, Gary Francis Post. Like with the radar and maybe with the symbol and all that kind of stuff. Can I say real quick, I just want to fill the audience in, that Gary Francis Post, he was in a Jeep accident while in the Air Force at the age of 20. The driver actually died in that. He was a passenger, and he suffered a head injury, and like, teeth had to be pulled out of him and stuff. And then he was sent off to desolate Greenland, and some people say that he came back kind of strange after this.
Yeah.
But besides that, is there anything like with the radar? And I heard you talking about the symbol of the Zodiac that was pretty interesting.
So he joined the Air Force and was a radar man. That's what he was trained to do. And that also involves training in cryptology, because back in the late 50s, early 60s, you know, we didn't have the technology we have now that would automatically encrypt messages. So particularly when he was up in Greenland, he had to use those cryptology skills in order to send coded messages to other radar stations along the distant early warning line up there, the dew line. And so he was obviously very skilled in that. But I mean, yeah, we kind of think that the symbol that he signed his letters with may be indicative of a representative of a radar screen. And, you know, a lot of people have thought it's supposed to be like a scope, but I don't tend to believe that, because if you look, the crosshairs, so-called, don't stop at the edge of the circle like they would on a scope.
Right.
And they actually extend past, right? And so on a radar screen, although the crosshairs physically stop at the edge of your screen, mathematically they don't. So you can have, I guess you would call it navigational or directional information that extends past what you're physically seeing on the radar screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that may be why, if that is why he chose that symbol, then that would be why the lines extend past. And it's just one clue of many in each of these taunting letters to his own identity.
Wow.
But it was, and no fault of police or anybody else, it just misinterpreted, you know, like, who's going to think about a radar screen being that's what that symbol is supposed to be. That's my theory.
No, I love it. I mean, that would be the latitude, the longitude, right? The lines across.
And I believe so, yeah. I was going to say, I'm no expert in that, but yes, I believe it's left a mile long.
Wow. Yeah, I agree, because, I mean, it's not, why would he be so sloppy with something that he cared about so much as his own personal symbol, right? I think it's intentional.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Everything he did in those letters had a purpose. I mean, everything, down to the stamp and the date that they were, that the letters were postmarked. I mean, everything has a meaning. So
yeah,
you're right. It's not just sloppiness.
No, I don't think so. And also, obviously, I mean, if I was him, All the clues that he's giving, and we'll get into this, you would never be able to figure out, even though he's claiming that you could, if you're smart enough, you'd be able to figure out what he's trying to put across through these ciphers and these codes and these clues and all that kind of stuff. You need to know who he is in order to put a lot of this stuff together. And now you guys think you know who it is, and a lot of this stuff is coming together, and we'll get to that. So we obviously can't cover and or even recap the entire Zodiac case, like I said, in one sitting here. But what I'd like to do with you is just before we really get into the really juicy stuff on this, just go through which murders or suspected murders by Zodiac stand out most as having connections to Post. And I guess we would probably be beginning with what is suspected to be his earliest crime or murder here with Sherry Jo Bates. Would you agree that would be that's the earliest, right? 18-year-old?
Well, okay, so we believe that he killed Sherry Jo Bates. Riverside PD does not believe that, even though they can't prove it.
Right.
But since our press release in October, we've actually had several people contact us saying, hey, there's this unsolved homicide down near San Diego. There's this one in Oceanside. There's this one here. Have you guys considered that these might be linked as well? And so that's one thing that we're looking into now, is some of these other unsolved cases out of Southern California and whether they might be linked to him. So I don't want to say for sure that Sherry Jo Bates was his first.
Right.
Because we've actually got one from 1962, I believe it is, that has similar MO and stuff. And so it's possible that he was killing earlier in the 60s than what we think.
That is
an angle that we're working on. So it's hard for, I can't really make a confident statement right now on which his first killing was.
For sure. For sure. I'd say it's the first believed suspected murder of the Zodiac. Mm-hmm. I think that's obvious that there could be more. To bring the audience quickly up to speed on the Sherry Jo Bates case, Sherry Jo Bates was an 18-year-old student at Riverside City College. Her murder occurred on October 30th, 1966. It was a Sunday, the day before Halloween, obviously. She was in the library from around 6 p.m. till 9 p.m., and witnesses say that they saw a man smoking and staring at her 1960 lime green Volkswagen Bug from the shadows. It's believed that this man disabled Sherry's Volkswagen by tampering with the ignition coil while she was in the library. Likely, the man comes up to her when her car won't start and then leads her to his vehicle. At least that's what the Zodiac claims later on, if it was in fact the Zodiac. And then she is attacked with a knife in a horrific attack. Her screams are heard.
Yeah.
She fought like hell. There's DNA found under her fingernail, correct?
Yes. There was hair found, you know, on her bloody hand or whatever that they were able to extract DNA from, my understanding.
Right. And there was a torn Timex watch found as well, so that could have been the perpetrators, as well as a cigarette butt found. So the Zodiac later took credit once open suspicion arose about his involvement. And this is what the Zodiac claimed to have done. He claimed to have offered her a ride, got her into the secluded area, and then said, quote, "It's about time." Where after Sherry Bates replied, "About time for what?" To which he simply replied, "About time for you to die," which sounds like the Zodiac for witnesses that survived, talking about the way that he would speak to them. One more thing here, Jennifer, that the Zodiac said in that letter. It's a quote, "Only one thing was on my mind, making her pay for the brush-offs that she had given me during the years prior," end quote. I personally feel like this is a red herring or maybe representative of another woman or women in general. So I just want to give a quick synopsis of what happened there with that particular crime and then ask you, they have the DNA of whoever perpetrated this crime. Do you guys yet have the DNA of Gary Francis Post?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, supposedly Riverside PD has this DNA sample, and that's what we were asking them to compare to Gary Post's DNA. And Vallejo PD and San Francisco PD both have a DNA sample from Post.
Okay.
they all refuse to do this comparison, and I don't... I'm not going to get on the soapbox. I don't understand why, because it's like, take you a day to do this.
Right.
So, we are... I have to stay a little bit vague on this part, but we have several... From several residents of Gary Post Town that came forward after our press release, this was actually one of the great benefits of that press release, we have several items that we know belonged to Gary Post. And so we are working the DNA aspect through three DNA labs around the country and at our own cost, by the way, out of our, literally out of our own bank accounts, because that's how much... We're trying to, this is how important it is to us to seek these answers.
Right, right.
And so some of that potential evidence involves shell casing and other ballistics evidence. And so we're also working to get ballistics experts, you know, to do their thing on these shell casings and all that. And then we want to present all of this on a silver platter to law enforcement and say, here you go.
Right.
Do the comparison. Like, what do you have to lose at this point?
Perfect. Okay.
So we are heading in that direction. And I know everybody's like, I'm not going to believe this until we have, so, you know, forensic evidence. Well, same here. Like, yeah. We are working on that, I promise. So that is our next big step.
Okay. I just want to get as much out of you as I can in the short amount of time we have. I've just felt so rushed to get this set up. The idea that this whole thing can just go away in an instant. I want to get this episode up too. And my fear is that we finish and you call me back and you're like, hey, blackout in effect.
No, I won't. All right.
Paul Lee Stein, the 30-year-old cab driver who worked for the Yellow Cab Co., who was shot with a fare there. There were some witnesses to that. A piece of his bloody clothing was taken from the killer, took it and mailed it as the Zodiac to the newspaper, I believe. And so with this, we obviously, there's a lot to this case. I mean, this was their best chance to have had caught the Zodiac in that moment, right? It was, go ahead.
Yeah, probably so, because it sounds like he was right there close by for a little bit after the shooting.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the description got through the game of telephone or whatever through the dispatcher became incorrect. And so police thought they were looking for African-American male rather than a Caucasian one. That was one big issue with that situation.
That's a huge issue.
But supposedly there was a couple eyewitnesses that did see Zodiac and, you know, worked with the sketch artist to create those sketches.
Yeah. Can you speak about the possibility that Gary Francis Post was friends with this cab driver, Paul Lee Stein?
Yeah. Through Dale's research, he did find that they knew each other previously.
Wow.
And had a falling out. And actually, the thing that, well, aside from, like, we know Zodiac committed that murder because of the shirt, right? And he probably took that piece of shirt because he knew, like, police weren't going to link this to the other Zodiac crimes because it was so different.
Yeah.
But because of the shirt, we know that it's linked. So anyways, but I believe that Post perpetrated the crime because in Dale decrypting these taunting letters that were sent to police, which all, by the way, are anagrams that have to be all the letters need to be rearranged in each one to reveal the actual message he wanted to convey.
Mm-hmm.
And Dale has decoded about half. In one of them, it clearly says that, you know, the killing of Paul Stein was business, basically, I think was the word that he used, something to that effect, making it very clear that he targeted Paul Stein because of this perceived offense or whatever, that I think Paul Stein stole some money from him is what I heard, something to that effect. And so, unfortunately, I guess Gary Post felt the need to escalate it and kill him for that. But anyways, in the decoded letter, you know, Paul Stein's name is there and him explaining why he killed him. So it's like there's no other explanation for this.
Wow.
So it has to be him, I think.
So we'll get into this decipher or with the code breaking and all that right now, I think. But I just wanted to add one more thing to that. So there's been some blowback on this one, just dumb stuff, okay? And I got to get this off my chest, where people are like, well, how would the Zodiac know which cab driver is going to pick him up? Like, how would he be able to pinpoint, like, if he made the call, hey, stupid, it's the Zodiac killer. Like, he can figure things out. He probably knows
he's
his route.
Extremely, he probably followed. He was probably surveilling him. Number one, and you know, nailing down his work schedule and work area.
Yeah,
like I've done a lot of surveillance, no doubt. Like
right.
Trained in it, but I could easily, if I need to go find a particular cab driver in my city, it would not take me very long to go you know, find the person and figure out their work schedule and all that stuff. So, like, he could do the same thing.
Right.
The guy's unfortunately brilliant. I don't know why. Yeah, I've heard a lot of pushback on that, too. And I'm like, that's...
It's dumb.
I don't know why.
That's an easy one. This guy's writing codes that took 50 years to figure out, and they're still not completely figured out. He could figure out how to get it in the cab of his victim, a guy that picks up people for a living. It's not hard.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Anyways. All right. Can we get into the – I have one more of the murders that I wanted to talk to you about. But before we do that, can we make it clear or just as clear as we possibly can? I understand – what steps need to be taken now with the use of Gary Francis Post's name as a key to the cipher and all that. Can we talk about that right now?
Yeah. Okay, so this is where, like, Dale's own brilliance comes into play, because this is the turning point, I think, in this case. Is so Dale's done all this research on Gary Post, right? Okay, confirmed everything Will told him, fine. And he's kind of like, well, now what am I going to do with all of this?
Right.
And he's just literally just at home one night alone and is like looking at, I think it was a Halloween letter.
Yeah.
He's looking at all these taunting letters that were sent to police, and he's kind of like, you know, they don't, I mean, they say something, but they don't, you know. And he's like, I wonder if they're anagrams. And Dale is not a, you know, a code breaker by any means. He's a news reporter. Anyway, so he took one of the letters and he removed all the letters of the name Gary Francis Post. And then over time, and this, you know, it wasn't instant, it took him weeks, but he rearranged the remaining letters into a legible message that had much more value to it than the taunting letter itself. And so he used that methodology and just kept decoding letter after letter. And this is over the course of like 5-6 years, okay?
Right.
It took him an extensive amount of time. But you can find Gary Francis Post's name in every letter. It's usually in the last third of the letter. And if you rearrange the remaining letters, you will find the message that he's actually trying to convey. And before people even start with this again, yes, you could find the letters to anybody's name in most of these, okay? I understand that. But that's not going to leave you with the correct combination of remaining letters that you need to decode.
I can't believe you have to explain that. I can't believe you have to keep on explaining that part. Me and my
I don't either. I know.
My fiance were watching, and she was like, this poor woman has to explain that part? That's ridiculous. And I was like, I know. But you have such patience with all this.
It's fine. I mean, I'll keep explaining it. So
good God.
So the cipher key, as they call it, to all of these anagrams is Gary Francis Post. So everybody knows the solution now. You can't solve them properly without the cipher key. And he was obviously never a suspect. No one it gave him a second look. So why would anybody have even thought to use his name to decode these over the years? They wouldn't have.
Right.
This is a very unique case and a very unique approach that Dale took in terms of he had to work the case backwards, essentially.
Right.
You needed to know the suspect's name.
Right.
In order to figure all this out.
Yes. Yes.
So over the course of these many years, Dale decoded about half the taunting letters, and he's still working on the rest. And we would love if, you know, the general public out there wants to help with the rest.
Yeah.
I know Dale is sick and tired of anagrams.
Right.
But through decoding these, this is a turning point in his manuscript for me. Three of the letters give specific directions to what we believe is an evidence site where Post initially disposed of the body of Donna Lass in the High Sierras.
Okay.
There, in my mind, is no other explanation for that.
No.
You cannot explain that away.
Oh, and we got to talk about that in a sec. I just want to make something clear, though, too, and I've heard you make this clear as well. You're not discounting, the case breakers aren't discounting all the work that's gone into breaking the initial code and getting these silly messages, it seemed, that we were getting out of like the 340 and all that. That was very difficult work, and that work was done appropriately. What you're saying now is that message is not the final message. The final message is in an anagram within that, and then using Gary Francis Post's name as the cipher, as the key, you can unlock the true message that is beyond that, right?
That's exactly right. And we've been working, I say we, that's kind of a joke. I mean, I've tried to help Dale, but I think I'm more of a hindrance. But we've been working on that 340 cipher. You're correct. And like I keep saying, like the guys that broke it about a year ago, I believe their solution is correct.
Right.
I mean, they're brilliant, you know?
Mm-hmm.
the thing is, everybody's all disappointed because, like you said, the message doesn't say much yet again.
Right.
So you have to decode it one more time. It's an anagram. So you'll find Gary Francis' post in the last third of it. You will find a song lyric, I'm not going to say which one, in the first third, and that's part of his pattern and his MO.
Right.
And then the rest needs to be decoded, and that's what we're working on, but it's so big.
Huge.
You know, it literally gives you a headache.
Oh God, it's killing me. I can't stand it. What I thought was really interesting was you noticed, you were saying that it's possible that when he misspelled words like Xmas with two S's or paradise with the C instead of the S was intentional so that it would work with his name.
Yeah. I mean, to create an anagram, you know, you obviously, like, you need to know what message you want to say, but then you've got to be able to convert it into something else. So he would have to purposely misspell things sometimes,
right,
in order to make the anagram work. And paradise being spelled with a C is often because he needed the C for Francis, his middle name.
Yeah, that shot me out of my chair when you said that. Like, yeah. It's not the biggest thing in this whole thing, but just something about that shot me out of my chair. So it makes perfect sense to me because, yes, I was one of the people who was always like, wow, he went to all that work just to friggin' taunt them again? He could have just done that writing that. He was already doing that. Why'd he go? That was so much work just to say something like that.
Yeah.
And it makes perfect sense that there's even more to it, but haha, you'll never get it because you'll never know my name. Mm-hmm. Now that you know the name, you can get it, right? Okay.
And it is possible that if someone who's really skilled in anagrams had worked on decoding them over the years, that I think it's possible you could decode one and maybe be left with the name, with the letters of his name. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. But I think that's a much longer shot than
actually having the name.
I mean, you basically, you need to know the name.
Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned their stuff that was pointing to Donna Lass.
Mm-hmm.
This one is so interesting. Lake Tahoe. Donna Lass was a nurse. I believe she was 25 years old. She was working overnights at a casino, September, as like doing first aid and stuff for probably drunks who were falling and people having panic attacks because they just lost all their money. So she was doing this job. September 6th, 1970, she goes missing and somebody calls her landlord and her work and, you know, tries to cover for her or something, but they think that this might've been the killer. Anyways, the 13-hole punch card, the Halloween card, and the peek through the pines card that the Zodiac sent all seem to lead to what you were just talking about. I'll let you talk about this.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, again, going back to Dale decoding these letters, he realized that, you know, some of these particular ones were like appeared to be giving like directions or something. And what it ended up being was, it gave some very specific directions up near Lake Tahoe to the specific tree that I had to actually went and refreshed my memory this morning, was reading his manuscript again, but a tree that Barry said would be on Forest Service land.
Mm-hmm.
And and that the tree was like deformed. It's like got a double trunk and then twisted back into itself and whatnot. And that this tree would be found so many feet from this particular campground, stuff like that. And so Dale, well, you know, his own time, his own dime, everything went up to this location with a couple other researchers and followed the directions and end up at this tree. And part of the decoded message said that Donna Lass's body was hung in a bear cache 40 feet up the tree. Well, obviously almost 50 years later, the bear cache is no longer there, but they got a 40-foot ladder. Lo and behold, 40 feet up the tree exactly, it is a bunch of hardware embedded in the tree that could have easily been used to hang bear cache from.
Like pulleys and things like that, right?
Yeah, parts of it. I mean, obviously it deteriorated over time, but definitely some parts that may have been used for exactly that purpose. And keep in mind that Gary Post was a house painter and had a 40-foot ladder as part of his business. So we think that's the ladder that he used up there to hang her bones. Now, obviously, we don't know what happened to her. I still think we could find her. I mean, that is one of my long-term goals. I think she's still up in the High Sierras somewhere, and I think we can find her. But most likely, I'm guessing he probably came back and removed the bear cache at some point and then disposed of her elsewhere.
Right.
But so again, like, when I got to that part of Dale's manuscript, I was like, again, there's no other way to explain this. I mean, he's being led right to this tree that it fits the description perfectly. How else do you explain that?
And we were talking about bear caches and teaching those young men about that kind of thing earlier, and now you got one. You also have it's 40 feet up, 40-foot ladder. He was a house painter. We'll get into that in a minute, too. Mm-hmm. There was paint found on the Timex watch that was ripped at the scene of the Sherry Joe Bates murder as well, but people discount that. They're like, well, if he was a painter, wouldn't he be skilled enough not to get paint on his watch? Shut up, dude. Like, shut up.
No, okay. So I do interior painting on the side. Like, I've painted all our houses and stuff, and I've seen several other people's houses. You cannot help but to get minute paint spatter on your arms when you're rolling a wall. I mean,
oh my God.
I mean, unless you work at a snail's pace, it's impossible to not get those minuscule paint spatter.
Can you imagine
no.
discounting all of your guys' work because painters should, just based on that one small thing that there's paint on the watch, they're like, forget it.
This shows you the the lengths people are trying to go to, I guess, to discredit us rather than why don't you just look at it all objectively?
Well, that's wrong.
You disagree with us, but take it in and think about it first.
Oh, my God. Well, that's...
it's not even the watch. I mean, so the watch is there with the paint spatter.
Sure.
And they still have the watch, I believe.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if they've done DNA analysis on it or what. But anyways, on top of that, like they have the size 10 boot print.
Right.
Which is the size Gary post-war, and it's a Wingwalker boot. And I know that this is circumstantial. I understand that. But it's just one more thing, one more detail at that scene that does not eliminate him, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, that's the size boot he wore and the style of boot that he preferred, which is not, you know, natural. Yeah. He was in the military.
Right.
So there's, like, several pieces of circumstantial evidence at a minimum from that scene that seem to point to him.
Okay.
At least don't exclude him.
So using Dale's breaking of this code with using Gary Francis Post's name as the cipher, he found this location where it's possible that Donna Lass's body was stored for a period of time. This is what we're thinking. Here's another thing on this. Gary Francis Post at some point had mentioned to a friend about a she in the tree, correct?
Yes.
And this could be who we're talking about, obviously.
Yeah. He makes several references over the years to what sounds like him having hung a body from a tree. For example, on the letter that was sent to Donna Lass's sister, uh-huh. which we don't know that was sent by Zodiac.
Right.
But he calls Donna the guardian of the pines.
Yep.
You know, and so it's little phrases like that that he has stated, that he has written, but also that are in his code that all seem to point to this is the reality of what he did with her body.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty details of all of what Dale decoded, but just know that there's several phrases that he decoded that talk about Donna Lass's body being hung from this tree.
Wow. How about the fact that Gary Francis Post's company, his painting company, was named Pine Mountain Painting?
Right. Well, I will say there's a little town called Pine Mountain Lake.
Right.
You know, outside of I think it's between the Barry and Yosemite up in there somewhere. But anyway, so I don't know whether he just named it after the town.
Right.
Or, another reference maybe.
It's interesting. It's interesting for sure.
For sure. Yeah, it's just something to take note of. Absolutely.
We're going to miss all kinds of stuff, but I only have so much of your time. I just want to say, Gary Francis Post, he's dead now. He died in 2018. He was arrested in 2016 for pushing his wife down the stairs.
That's correct. So he had two arrests before his death, one in 2014 and one in 2016. And the 2016 one was a felony, for domestic assault.
All right.
I don't remember the exact charge, but something to that effect.
Okay, well, it shows he's got some violent tendencies, though, right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was our understanding is that he was quite a controlling person over his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And, like you said, had some violent tendencies. I mean, he swung a hammer at Will's head trying to kill him.
Right.
So he's got some issues for sure.
Yeah. Besides all that, in my opinion, he looks like the sketch. When you look at the old photos of him, if you put some glasses on that, he looks like the sketch to me. How about you?
Yeah. Well, that's something that Will first brought up to Dale. He had some pictures and he's like, look at this. He's like, this is part of the reason I started thinking about this. Like, he looks like the sketch. And I guess he'd made a joke to Gary Post at one point, like, hey, old man, which is what he called him, and that's what Gary liked to be called. And by the way, that comes up in some of the decoded messages.
Wow.
Anyways, hey, old man, this looks like you, you know? And of course, that was many, many years ago. And so Gary Post kind of blew it off at that point, it sounds like, you know, and I think Will did too. But then when it came back around later on, and Will actually confronted him, that's when, you know, Gary tried to ramp up the violence and kill him.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. If you have nothing to do with the Zodiac killings, I don't know why you would get so angry.
Right.
Over that, but.
Yeah, and every photo I see of Gary Francis Post, and I'm going to get some shit for this because people will be like, "Oh my God, you can't be like saying it's this guy." I'm not saying it's this guy. I'm just saying what's interesting about it. All the photos of him with his younger pals, who they would go out on these weird hunting trips, and from what I've heard, like do pranks on local police officers to try to get them out of the neighborhood by throwing rocks through their windows and stuff. Really odd things. All the photos, it looks like. God, that looks like what the Zodiac killer would look like. You know, like it's like he doesn't want his picture taken, and he's got all these like young guys with their arms around him, like the old man. You know, I learned everything I know from this old man. It's so weird and so compelling and so interesting. There was one more thing I wanted to ask you about, and I want to give you a chance to clear up anything that we might have missed that you want to make sure you get out there. Were his ashes spread in a suspicious kind of area? I barely saw this.
You know what? I didn't even know what was done with his ashes until recently, but okay. I guess that they were spread up in the High Sierras. Go figure. I'm assuming that was his, like, what if he had a will that's what he put in there that he wanted done.
Right.
That he wanted to be cremated and scattered in the High Sierras, which is like 100% appropriate for Zodiac.
Right.
But beyond that, I don't know any detail about it. Like, I honestly don't know exactly where his ashes were scattered or who scattered them or anything like that. So
what would be the significance of that? Or just what's making you kind of like laugh about that? Just to be clear.
I think it's just cause that was like his area of operation.
Right.
I mean, he, like you said, groomed his posse of guys up in the Sierras. You know, he committed crimes up in the Sierras. He obviously had some attachment to it. I mean, to put Donald S. up in a tree, I mean, it's weird. It's just plain strange. And a hell of a lot of work that's unnecessary to the crime. But I just think he had some sort of attachment to the outdoors up there. And it was like, I don't know, he felt like he owned it or it's his base or...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think that there's a lot of victims that we don't know about. There's so much more that's going to be coming back out. I also think that if this man is the Zodiac, or just let's just say the Zodiac killer, got off on knowing things that other people didn't know about what he had done, like having a body up in the trees and sending these messages, like that's something he would get off on, just having little secrets, right? He liked codes. I mean, the guy loved secrets, right?
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I mean, I think like I said before, he gave a lot of clues to his identity, but also his personality through these letters. You know, just being able to create these codes was obviously a clue into the killer themselves, but one that just didn't materialize.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think so. You know, like most serial killers, Ted Bundy, BTK, whatever, like there is an absolute sexual component behind it, a sexual compulsion,
mm-hmm.
you could even call it. And that does not come through with Zodiac.
Right.
At least in my opinion.
No.
And so I think it was more the thrill of how much danger, like how much risk can I make myself take and still get away with it? And I think that's what he got off on, was the thrill of leading this double life very effectively.
Yep.
You know, just like going out and killing people and making these crazy anagrams and taunting letters and then going painting somebody's house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like total like dual... Not dual personality, it's just like a public persona and a private one, and I think that was the thrill for him.
Yeah.
And I kind of think he kept upping the ante, too, which you probably heard me say, like, in some of these cases, he wanted to make it harder and harder for himself. And in fact, I have a theory that some of these anagrams he created prior to even killing the victim.
Wow.
And so part of the challenge to himself was having to find a victim that would match what he had put in the coded anagram.
Yes.
You know, I don't know if we'll ever know for sure if that's true or not, but it's just something that came to my mind in the theory that I have.
Very
interesting. Because some of these letters are mailed like right after, and I was like, you can't, I mean, as smart as he was, I don't think he could create an anagram overnight.
Right.
So it almost like he had to be working on them ahead of time before the crime.
That's super interesting. Super interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, there was another side road I could have taken us down right there with remember they found that note underneath the chair in the one case. It was like the killer had written this note, put it underneath the chair, knowing no one would ever get it. But if it was the Zodiac, he would get off on knowing it's there. Just knowing certain things are around. There's clues everywhere, you know, and for him, sure. for him to be walking around the world full of pride, constantly probably with dopamine dumps in his mind, just every time he thinks of it or every time he hears about it, the movie comes out, Dirty Harry comes out, then you got the Zodiac movie come out. He probably just thrilled throughout his entire life. And if it was in fact Gary Francis Post, our only hope for him not getting away with it is that there's some kind of afterlife, which he believed in, right? He believed that he had slaves.
Depends how you interpret his letters. at face value, he was always saying he's collecting slaves from afterlife or whatever it was. Part of that may just be he needed those letters, you know, in order to make the anagram. If you break the anagram, get the real message. So,
right.
Slaves has a V in it, which is a rare letter. You know, there's not a lot of words that have the word V in it that are going to make sense. So that may be one reason that he picked that word.
Right.
To use more than one time.
Right.
I really wouldn't take any of these letters at face value.
No.
I mean, we know not to, because it's like at face value, he threatened to blow up school buses of kids and that never materialized. And that wasn't ever a plan of his.
Right.
As we now know, once you decode that letter. But I don't know. But that's just my...
Yeah. I'm just really hoping that there is an afterlife, I guess. And I just kind of threw that out there. But we can wrap this up. I've taken up an hour of your time. I just, what I want to say.
Oh, no, it's fine.
Okay. Is there anything else you wanted to add or get out there?
And just like a couple more details on the letters.
Yep.
It's not always just the written message itself that needs to be taken into account. You have to look at the envelopes and the information that's on the envelopes and, like, for instance, the stamps. Like, he picked particular stamps. Like, there's one envelope that had an Apollo 8 stamp, and lo and behold, in the decoded anagram that accompanies that envelope, there is a quote from the Apollo 8 crew. I'm not going to say which one it is, but, you know, it's things like that. Like, the one of the letters referencing Donna Lass. The postage stamp has, it's like snow on the trees or something like that, you know, and it's like, oh my gosh, okay. So all these little things, even the postmark date is important sometimes. And actually we were told that he had his own postmark machine or whatever it is at his house, so he could dictate what date, meaning what numbers went on the postmark on the envelope. And when you take into account numbers on some of these, that's how Dale got directions up to the evidence site near Tahoe, because obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, but like to give proper directions, you need to use some numbers.
Right.
And so you've got to look at the company envelopes as well.
Right.
And, you know, another thing is like people say, oh, he claimed 37 victims. And I'm not so sure about, I mean, I do think he had more than seven, but I'm not sure he had 37. But do some research on how radar numbers are written out. And what you do is next to the radar screen, you put, I guess it's a lot long or whatever, but you would put it with a minus sign in front of it, is my understanding. It is one way to write a navigational direction, I guess, if you do radar. So the 37 may have, I don't know that that's the number of victims. I think it might have some other significance in terms of maybe giving direction somewhere or something like that. I think it's just part of the anagram.
Yeah.
That those numbers need to be used. So, and I'm hopeful that maybe as we hopefully crack all of them someday, that maybe there's directions to where Donna Lass is now.
Right.
But we just don't know yet.
You seem to think, or I mean, I think I might, I felt like maybe some animals had gotten up there and maybe dragged her all over the place over the years, but you guys are hoping that he brought her down kind of like to get the heat off of that particular situation, maybe buried her somewhere.
That's my hope, because that would give us a better chance of finding her.
Yeah.
But obviously we don't know. I mean, the bear cache could have just disintegrated. And like you said, the bones got scattered. But, you know, you would think by now if the bones got scattered, it's near a campground
okay.
that's still used. So you would think hikers or somebody would have discovered at least one of her bones.
Right.
But it's not impossible that they didn't either. So I think either scenario has to be considered. But I'm just hopeful for the former, and that because obviously we'd like to find her.
Right.
And at least, get a little bit of resolution for her and her family.
I was trying to let you go here, but there's so many questions. Just one more. There's surviving victims, right?
Yeah.
So
there's at least two surviving victims, and there's at least 20 family members of victims who are still alive, and all of them deserve answers. That's all we're after.
Absolutely. As I really feel that from you, that's your driving force. I'm a little more selfish or something. I don't know what it is. What I meant by that is that couldn't you show those surviving victims the old pictures of Gary Francis Post and see if any of them can ID them, or is that something that's going to be coming up in the future here?
That I'm not really. Well, I shouldn't say I'm not privy to it. I'm privy to all of it, but I'm not at liberty, I guess, to
divulge
exactly who Dale has gotten in contact with over the years and who the Casebreakers is currently working with on some of that stuff. That's something that will come out later on, I think, in this documentary.
All right. So that's
also just to protect these people, too. You know, they don't probably want to be hassled.
Yeah.
We're just trying to protect everybody who is helping us behind the scenes and who is talking to us about stuff like that. But know that those conversations are going on.
That's amazing. I mean, when you talk about just people only having heard 10%, knowing that part of that 90% would be something like that, knowing that part of that 90% would be DNA, those are massive things. And knowing that part of that 90% is showing how these codes were broken down and led to things like the Donna Lass possible cash body site and all that kind of stuff. It's incredible that he even found something that resembled what was described in the list. Anyways, okay.
Exactly. I know. I'm still astounded by it. I really am.
It's unbelievable. All right. Well, the way I see it, the Casebreakers should be commended for the time you're all spending on that law enforcement can't afford to spend. And right or wrong in the end here, I'm just thankful we have groups like the Casebreakers out there because if we're to depend on the know-it-alls arguing in discussion threads to pick up the slack here, absolutely nothing would get done, just kind of like in Parliament, like here in Canada or in, it's like crabs in a bucket in those comment sections. I'm just really, when I see you talking about it, when I've watched you on YouTube and all that, I'm like, thank God it's someone like her, because you're not a dummy. You're not a nut. You're qualified. And eventually we can calm these people down to listen. And I just wanted to help and be a part of that if I could. And I hope that I look forward to what everything that is to come.
Absolutely. I'm hoping some of those people will maybe not necessarily hop on board, but I actually want to make a video at some point with Dale showing his exact, I've described it verbally, his process, and I think it's pretty clear, but I would love to make a video with him really showing his process for these anagrams, because seriously, we would like to crowdsource and get people to help us figure out the rest. We're not trying to lay claim to any of that. Let's just get them solved, And I had hoped maybe some of these Zodiac experts who have done all this research over the years would have reached out one to help with that, but
have they?
So far, I don't think we've had, I don't think so, not that I know of.
Well, they don't want the fund end.
They're just too busy, like you said, going on Reddit and whatnot, completely not helpful, but that's fine. If that's how they want to waste their time, I guess that's okay, but we've got better things to do.
Right. Yeah, like solving this thing. I did a little intro at the start where I kind of attacked that whole thing, so I kind of covered that a bit. Just that some of those so-called experts seem to not want this fun to end. And the fact that it would even be fun when we're talking about so many victims and the terrorization of the country for the last, for that period. And
indeed.
Oh, my God. Anyways, where can people reach out? Where can they find you guys and maybe donate to the cause and find out more?
You can go to our website. It's thecasebreakers.org, and there's a wealth of information on there about some of the cases we're working. And you'll also see there's a section that has videos and podcasts, and it's not all just about Zodiac. You'll see some videos that me and my investigative partner, George, have done on our current case of Debbie Williamson. And the last case we worked of Rebecca Gould, those are actually my focus much more than Zodiac and what I prefer to work on. But you can read our team bios. You can actually email us if you want. So if anybody out there does want to lend their skills, like, please send us an email and give us a little background and tell us what, how you'd like to help us. And we read all of those. And we also take requests to work on cases. There's no guarantees. But, you know, if you have a case that you think would be appropriate for a team to look at, you know, you can email us about that too.
Awesome.
Like you said, if you want to make a tax deductible donation, we would certainly welcome that, because we are several thousand dollars in the hole right now out of our own pockets on the DNA and ballistic stuff. So we wouldn't mind reimbursing ourselves, but if that doesn't happen, it doesn't happen.
Right.
And then for me, my handle on YouTube and Twitter is Jen Buchholz PI. So you can find me personally at those two places. And I have my own YouTube channel with a few videos on there.
Yes.
And Case Breakers has a YouTube channel as well that you can go see. So we're going to have some new content on the Case Breakers one very soon. But not about Zodiac.
No. Oh, man. I'm tired of it, too. And I only did like 4 days straight here on it, just trying to – you must be dying there. But it's so important, and it seems like it's so close, too. So
yeah. I feel like it is. Yeah.
I do, too.
And then I'll plug my own podcast.
Please do.
Huge thanks to my employer, American Military University, because they rebranded one of their podcast channels this year for me and George. And we are currently in season two of Break the Case, and that is covering me and George's real-time investigation into the unsolved murder of Debbie Williamson. So
yep.
She was killed in 1975 in Lubbock, Texas, stabbed to death outside her back door. And George and I have actually made a trip to Lubbock. We did some on-the-ground investigation, interviews, met with police, did all kinds of stuff down there. And so if you want to tune in and hear about our progress on that, you can listen to Break the Case. And we've also got a Facebook group you can follow and help us. I mean, you know, we're trying to crowdsource here.
Yeah.
But it's Unsolved Murder of Deborah Sue Williamson. So we urge anybody that is interested to join and, you know, engage in brainstorming and conversation with us.
It's a great podcast. I've been listening to it. No nonsense and tons of information. I think the listeners will really enjoy it. I believe if you had gotten involved in podcasting 5 or 6 years ago, you'd be huge. but it's so oversaturated right now, right? But
it is.
Break the Case.
It is.
Also, your YouTube channel, I saw you with what is it? The Debbie Williamson case? Do I got her name right?
Yes.
Okay.
I think I have a couple of videos from when we were in Lubbock on there, and I'm going to try to put more together, and then I've got a few from the Rebecca Gould case out of Arkansas that we worked on.
That was huge too.
And that one is in limbo right now because it did result in arrest, but we're waiting on trial next year. So that's why George and I decided to team up again and tackle another case, and hopefully we'll have the same outcome.
So cool. All right. Yeah. Check out Break the Case. I'll put everything that you mentioned there into the show notes for anybody who wants to contribute or check out more of what's going on with the Crime Breakers. And I want to thank you so much, Jennifer Buchholz, for your
time. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation.
So did I.